Hello, and welcome to Forum Men Meta, the War Machine and Hordes podcast all about champions and the active duty roster.
Episode 1. In this episode, what we're going to do is go over the current active duty roster for Season 4 and discuss common themes, casters that we want to see, casters that we don't want to see, and see where that shakes out, what kind of thoughts we have while we build our lists as we go into this Season 4 of ADR. My name's Robert.
My name is Jeremy.
My name is Aaron.
So, I'm really excited. I'm playing Menoth for the first time, and I am really excited to play High Reclaimer. Those clouds seem like they're going to be real strong in a shooting heavy meta, which is expected. I am worried about Kane 2, but he's not in the meta. Thank you. I'm very happy. The day he gets on the ADR, I'm going to be sad. At the moment,
It's a dark, dark day.
It's a dark day. It is. I'm really afraid of Haley 1. I think... Really? Yeah, absolutely. Speed 5 across most of Menoth's and most of Menoth's questions. Speed 4 on many of Kador's things that they want to get there. What's the other faction? Krix. Krix goes fast. Okay. But
they go speed 4. Yeah. So, I mean, like, whenever they get the
minus 2 speed. Two of the three factions that I'm going to be looking at most heavily, Kador and Menoth, just really, really are going to be hamstrung by it. I think that High Reclaimer can play into that game, but I'm not sure many others can. Speed 5 Menoth is... not going to enjoy a minus 2 speed. And
as a person who's looking at Scorn and stuff, like, that, I completely agree with that sentiment. Yeah, you can run, but all it does is give you hope that you can possibly win. And it's just sad, and it just makes you... Oh, I thought I wasn't recording for a second. It just makes you, you know... The hope that you can possibly, you know, defeat that army whenever it's just going to be shooting you every turn over and over and over again.
My hope is that things like High Reclaimer's Cloud Wall can get around that. I imagine a very shooty heavy list. And as long as they can't see through the clouds, I'm going to be okay. But flanking
so
units
Gunmage, Captain
like,
Adidas are still going to ruin your day.
They'll take a shot. But I'm okay. Actually, yes, please, kill one knight. Please kill one knight. I want you to kill one knight every turn. Actually, two knights. One knight from each unit every turn. I'm okay with this.
Except that Haley's feat gives everyone an extra gunshot. But
okay. Okay, two knights. Just give High Reclaimer just a little more souls, just a couple more souls every turn. We'll get there. We'll get there.
All right, Jeremy, what are you excited to be playing this ADR season?
Oh,
what are you excited to be playing, and what are you afraid of playing against?
I'm excited to play Caliban. That's what I'm really excited to play this season.
Really?
Yeah. No, I honestly think Mark III is going to be his time to shine. He has a lot of good options, a lot of interesting things that he can bring. And like, and especially in terms of, like, I didn't even think about stuff that, like, picks that he could bring that might be better, like bringing brigands that go up to, like, an insane, like, POW, like, 17 or some crap with gunshots.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Like, can we please, for the love of God, get commandos on the goddamn release schedule?
That'd be pretty amazing.
I'm surprised you're not interested in Barnabas.
No, I am. I mean, but not as much as I am. I can't wait to play with Parasite. Like the idea of playing, like, Lilith 1 is an interesting idea to play, like, get to play. But the idea of with Caliban, with especially with his feet, like, getting to hot swap, like, Parasite out of activation, like, just laser beam down a heavy, and then, like, redirect prey and Parasite onto something else, and then laser beam down another heavy. It's just, with, like, gunshots, just... It gets me warm in all the right places, you know? And then I don't want to use Haley 2 as the other thing I don't want to play. So I don't want to play against Krios 1 because it's not fun to go, all right, so how do I not die to just random, like, everything getting knocked down and then dying?
How do I avoid getting knocked over? Almost all of it revolves around And my upkeep spells. Yeah, purification. Yeah.
You just have to surround yourself with pirates. They're not minions, I know. No. Put yourself in a swamp pit.
Yeah, I was about to say, Barnabas has it covered. Morgul 1 is steady and has not beast that can't be knocked down. And then Legion just cries and dies
or
a little bit inside.
Or stop line of sight to you so that even if you are knocked down, they can't get to you?
So how do you make... that's a perfectly good example. So what things can I put in front of my caster that aren't colossal that won't get knocked down? That's
terrain?
What we just talked about. Huh?
Terrain?
Battle engines. They're cheaper than colossals.
You do have access to a sacral vault and a meat thresher.
I'm more excited about the meat. Oh man, I just want to.
Oh my god, hold on a second. Let's talk. Let's talk for a second.
You're excited to thresh your meat.
Let's talk for a second that the fact that Circle gets meat threshers now.
Oh,
can we talk about that?
Meat threshers with lightning tendrils sound good.
If only it wasn't friendly faction.
Right.
Does meat thresher works for everybody? Wait, did Scorn get the sacral vault?
No.
Damn it!
Sacral vault is still exactly the same. But okay. Apparently everyone can thresh their meat.
I am so angry right now.
I
don't want to be those people that thinks that Privateer Press hates Scorn players, but that just makes me go, why? So Circle gets to just have this giant bulldozing meat threshering bullshit. But Scorn can't go, all right, I'm going to put all this chaffy garbage in front of you, suck all its souls away, and shoot you to death with some range attacks.
Exactly.
You know, I'm actually kind of with Jeremy on this one.
It's because they care about their souls.
Oh, yeah.
About their own souls.
I'm kind of with Jeremy on this one for the same reason that I think Convergence should have access to the meat thresher.
Fuck you, Aaron.
All right. Okay, moving. We're going to move along here.
Yeah, okay, we're done with that.
Just to talk about Jeremy's point, I think if you look hard enough in every faction, you can find one or two solutions to getting knocked down and shot.
Yeah, no, I completely think there is. It's just frustrating to have to think about that.
Absolutely. It's a question that if you're playing champions, you're going to need to.
Oh,
Legion,
it's guard dog on the protector, I think.
Cock should be able to thresh its own.
No, that doesn't stop you from being knocked down. Never mind.
No.
Oh, what the hell I was thinking about.
So the things that I'm interested in seeing on the ADR is one person in particular that's very near and dear to my heart that I have not gotten the chance to ever put on the table, and that is Adeptus Ron, who he does everything that Kruger 2 wants to do, and he also kills you along the way. He does a lot of really interesting things. He is one of the most he's one of the most dynamic assassins, one of the most effective ranged assassins in the game. And he can do it with his army in such weird ways as well. Just yanking you out from behind a wall when you think you're safe, or slamming something over you and knocking you over, and then just... It's death by paper cuts.
He's got the razzle dazzle of assassination.
He does. He still has magic ability guys that can do force bolt.
Yeah, he does. That get extra range. The other thing that I'm really excited about is Tanith, who I think is one of the strongest new battle box casters.
Tanith.
She has a lot of things provided to
Tanith
her in Circle.
Is brutal.
She's brutal.
It's like she asks questions that are hard to answer.
Yeah, she has things in Circle that I didn't think Circle would see. Admonition is a huge one.
Yeah.
Her gun is incredibly powerful.
I believe back in Mark II, me and you had a conversation where we said Circle's never going to get admonition.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I have seen a game where Tanith one-rounded a Colossal in Mark III with one heavy. I mean, it wasn't just the heavy.
It was a heavy and a multitude of other attacks.
It was a heavy, a couple of infantry, and a light, and Tanith finished it off herself.
Yep.
She's like, I got this, guys. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, bro.
Scything Touch is incredible, and the various applications that you can do to it or do with it is fantastic.
Her ability to turn on minions as well is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, deceptively good.
It's incredibly powerful, and Reeves with Affliction is just... something that you should vomit over, basically.
Yeah. Oh, dear sweet Lord in heaven.
It's incredibly strong. And the other thing, the other person that's very near and dear to my heart that I will hopefully be putting on the table is good old Magnus the Traitor. I cannot really explain my bromance with this guy.
No one can explain that for anyone that ever's ever had it.
He's just such a badass, and no one can explain why you love him.
You're a bad seed, Chad.
I am a bad seed.
Throwback.
I'm excited to see how I believe that power up is a very, very strong benefit for him. Mercenaries in general, not only warjacks in general, but I think mercenaries and Magnus had a very hard time running his jacks because he wants to spend all his focus and he doesn't have enough focus to do it. He does some new interesting things. He has Scourge now for a knockdown.
Yeah, and now you have Arc Nodes, Rockets, and Scourge.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, you can knock down like a multitude of people, and then your jacks still get to charge and do shit.
Also, Death Ward is incredibly better than Temper Metal.
Oh, shit.
It is still +2 armor. However, you can put it onto a unit and also...
Or Vanguards.
Yeah, or onto a Vanguard. And then it allows you to keep your jacks very fresh for a very long time because you get to pick where the damage goes when they're getting damaged.
What's the big boogeyman to you, Chad?
I'm not excited to see P. Vale across the table from me, and this is primarily because P. Vale and I have a history. Over my entire long career of playing War Machine, primarily Circle of 8 years, I have never once ever beaten P. Vale before.
But Chad, she's totally not like as good as she used to be anymore, and she's not that good of a caster. Didn't you hear all the Legion players saying that?
No.
Her feet doesn't affect her anymore, Chad. That's like the end all be all of
that. It is actually pretty important.
I know it's important. It is. But like that's like
I have not heard a lot of Legion players say that. I mean, yes,
I have.
They admit that she's not as good, but they still don't. I still haven't heard a lot of bitching.
I'm also not thrilled to see Piedani across the table.
Yeah, one of the best crit casters in the game right now. Yeah.
Actually,
you can bet that almost every Crix pairing is going to have Piedani as one of the casters.
Yeah, regardless of if it's ADR or not.
Exactly.
She is considered to be the strongest caster in Crix.
If you don't have an answer for in Champions what you're going to do for Piedani, you're doing it wrong. And she has ADR, so if you're in Masters... She's going to have 40 points of sideboard against you. It's going to be disgusting.
It's 20 points. Oh, no.
It's 40 points.
We're Mark 3. Two. Mark We're talking three, about Mark 3 now.
Mark 3 is actually 40 points of sideboard.
Okay.
It is disgusting.
Bananas.
So, Aaron, what are you looking forward to? What are you looking forward to putting down on the table? What are you not looking forward to seeing across the table from
you? And you can't see your cock again.
I wasn't going to. Since this is not a visual episode, I will inform our listeners that I'm flipping you off right now.
I know. I'm number one. I appreciate that.
I am actually looking forward to playing Trolls. I guess I can't say the whole faction, but I'm definitely looking forward to seeing Doomy and playing him into this meta. I think he'll be okay.
What do you think he brings?
I mean, there's going to be I expect at least the first part of the ADR to have a lot more heavies, a lot more jacks, a lot more beasts, a lot more things like that. Doomy kind of survives that pretty well. I mean, his feet... His feet protects him against that. Obviously, there's, dude spam not as good, but still awesome.
Don't look at me like that, Robert.
Doesn't he still have Rampager?
Maybe.
Let me continue while War Room is loading.
Okay. And my boogeyman is absolutely P. Denny and Scar.
Scar is not as bad as she used to be.
What are you afraid of from Scar?
So from past experience,
she only affects like up to 5 models.
Yeah, it's 5 models for her Fino, which applied in the right place is still incredibly strong.
Yeah, but it's not like an entire
No, it's not like it's, 40 dudes yeah.
right.
anymore.
It's not as strong, but again, in a lower model count because you're expecting I personally am expecting a lot more beasts, a lot more jacks, things like that. Shutting down 5 of them, still pretty amazing.
Rampager costs 4. It is range 10. The other big thing about Doomshaper 1 is he picked up a spell called Guardian Beast, which applies the effect of Dark Sentinel. It's a better version of Watcher. Dark Sentinel, if you're familiar with Veil 1 in Mark 2, it's a very, very nasty ability that I had a very interesting conversation with Charles Aerosmith, that there is literally no way to prevent it without there. If there's a beast near her and you walk into it, or if you're already inside of it, there is no way to avoid it.
Can you not knock down the targets?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, you can knock down the targets. The only other way, ironically, because you can't forfeit your movement anymore the same way you used to, the only way to do it is if you get teleported, because you have to forfeit your movement.
Right? Or aim, right?
No. Okay, no. So this is the very important thing. It does not say when you end in advance. It says when you end your movement phase.
Oh.
So if you sacrifice your movement to aim or whatever, or if you have to sacrifice it to stand up, you are ending your movement phase, thus you are triggering Dark Sentinel.
So you actually hit the phase even though you've sacrificed, forfeited.
Correct.
It. Okay.
Yeah. There is no way around it.
Well, I think...
aside from distance and things that can't be moved.
Correct.
The Watcher and Guardian Beast are way better than I thought they were. That's awesome.
Scar and P. Denny together still scare me.
Ugh. Not favorable.
My answer to them in Mark 2 was Axis Tier 4.
Let's not do too many throwbacks to Tier
4. No, but I mean...
That's fair. Okay.
Looking forward, I don't know that I have as good of an answer.
Okay. I completely agree with you on P. Denny. I'm not sure how Scar will do in the front of it.
And with the current season, thanks to Season 4 ADR, you get to face both of them as a pairing with specialists in Masters format or champions. It's definitely the couple to beat.
Yeah. Yeah, giving both of them together in a Masters format with 40 points of specialist. You're saying there's a question that they can't answer? Maybe. I don't
Kruger
know.
1 doesn't really care.
Yeah, Kruger 1 doesn't really care.
Kruger 1 doesn't care about Denny, Crippling Grasp, and all that?
He does to some extent. However, she has to be careful about how close she's getting to him because of the amount of indirect damage that he can generate. He can just drop one of his feet AoEs on top of her head and do damage. Denny is one of those people that likes to spend her stack in either upkeeping or throwing spells out on the turns that I'm assuming that she'd be stepping forward and catching someone like Kruger in her feet. She would be camping more heavily, but
with the new rules,
because his AoEs are just power tens, I think you might be able to weather some of the storm.
So the game plan is
there's enough indirect damage that Kruger Dwan can do to a caster as high def as Denny when she's relying on you not being able to hit her or target her, that he can just do it. And with the new focus rules, enough POW 10s will kill her.
Sure. So the game plan is attack the thing within 4 inches of her and zot her to death maybe over 2 turns.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah. I can totally see that working.
That seems all right.
Yeah.
That seems all right. So
I mean, Denny classically has wanted to run gunline lists in order, you know, to help elevate the Crippling Grasp and the feet. The counterpunch to that is that Kruger has a new spell called Gale Winds, which gives friendly faction models inside of his control area +3 defense against ranged and magic.
So Crippling Grasp is only -1 defense?
Correct, but she also still has to land it.
Oh, okay.
So,
right. So
like it's making
she feats your +1 defense, then she has to boost, hopefully, to hit Crippling Grasp on the target she wants.
Yeah.
I see.
So then at that point, she's still spending more of her stack to try and to still apply the same amount of pressure. It makes it a little bit more difficult. And I think especially now, every extra focus that you can force a caster to spend is that much more important.
I completely agree with Chad.
Absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about the ADR itself, what maybe exists there that you might not have noticed, and if you're going to need certain answers to questions that are going to be asked over and over again. I know that I've talked off mic with all of you about this, but Knockdown is just everywhere on the casters in this current season's ADR. And I just want to briefly go over this real quick. Kane 1 has a slam spell. Striker 1 has an earthquake knock you down spell. Krios 1 will knock you down with his feet. Malekith has Scourge. Sorsha has Scourge. Denny has Scourge.
Well, wait. What the hell kind of world do we live in where she picked up Scourge and still has Freezing Grip?
She didn't pick it up. If we're going to talk about Mark's
Scourge,
she had Scourge, but it was cost
Tempest.
4.
Oh, no, it was okay. Tempest. It was better.
It was Tempest.
Oh, right.
Tempest is better.
Okay.
Because it's a straight power. No. It's a straight power 12, whereas Scourge gets halved, and it's Tempest is also a better.
Either way, Sorsha 1.
So she has Freezing Grip and Scourge now?
Sorsha 1's going to feet knock you down. If you're not immune to stationary and knockdown, she has your number.
Yeah, she still has Tempest. And guess what?
The fuck do I like to play this game?
Freezing Grip? Hey, Jeremy, did you notice that Freezing Grip only costs 3 now?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that either.
Ron has Force Hammer. I don't know the Convergence. Does Convergence have a knockdown spell? Okay, no knockdown and Convergence on the caster. That's cool.
But the Dongolator still exists.
It does. It does. The Dongolator
and its reach. It's a 2-inch reach. Now.
Oh right, and it got 2-inch reach on the other weapon, on both weapons.
Yeah, the Dongolator did used to not be a 2-inch reach.
I see. Both Phineas, Shea, and Magnus now have multiple ways to knock you down.
Yay!
if you consider the Commodore Cannon part of Shea, and the Revenger, not the Revenger, the Renegade part of.
Wait, let's talk about the knockdown that Scorn has.
Yes, I think slams. Scorn.
Grand Slams.
Scorn and maybe the Legion lineup, because I don't know it, are the only places you don't find knockdown on the caster in ADR.
Yeah.
So if your caster can be knocked down, figure out a way to fix that shit.
Yeah. Best way you can.
Ragnar has it on Trolls? Or?
Ragnar has it.
He has a crit knockdown.
He has a Scourge. Yeah, that's right. He has a non crit knockdown. I don't know what the spell name is, dumb. But. Earthquake is Striker 1.
This does damage.
It's literally a
please knock, hold. War Room's loading.
Knock your ass down. No, I have it here. What's his name? Ragnar.
Ragnar the Runer Master.
The name of the spell is
Shockwave.
4-inch AoE, knock him down. It is
range 10, pow 14.
Yeah, it is. It's everywhere. And again, minions have a knockdown feat. Will Hungerford, I got to play a game against him at the Privateer Press Scramblers at Lock and Load. That was a fantastic game, but he played Barnabas and pop and dropped, and Malekith didn't like it. It was bad.
Yeah,
it was real
Malekith
bad.
Shouldn't like it. You should take it hard.
Well, now that I figure out the Fortified
Fat,
Vigilant
flaming
tech.
Asshole.
The Fortified Vigilant is how I would stop that now, but I didn't know about that then. I didn't build my list with any kind of sense. Because it was the first Mark, it was like literally the first Mark II game I played. Mark III, rather.
Yeah.
Have you guys noticed any other common themes or anything else that you're worried about or need to think about when you're looking at the ADR?
Each one has a really good answer to armor. Every faction has a really good answer to armor.
Yeah. And there's also, I mean, not just in the ADR per se, but like in general, there's a lot more access to Grievous Wounds throughout the factions.
In terms of like just the stuff you can bring to bear.
Yeah.
Alton Ashley works for a lot of factions.
He does. So you're going to see, you think, a lot of armor cracking and a lot of shutting down healing after you've cracked that armor, but not necessarily finished it off.
Yeah.
I can definitely see that being strong.
Yeah, it's pretty strong. Chad.
Yeah, let's take a second to talk about the fact that Gallows Groves now and a lot of the Grievous Wounds abilities specifically say cannot have damage removed from them.
All abilities that stop healing stop all damage being removed.
So you can stop Warjacks from getting fixed, which is huge. I found out in a game that a Gallows Grove stops Phoenix Protocol from getting procced when you drop Imperatus down to 0, because it specifically says that you remove damage from them, and Trempic Force says they cannot have damage removed from them.
It'll stop reconstruct from Syntharion as well.
Oh, yep. Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it'll just shut that shit down.
Shut that shit down.
All right, so now let's take the next bit of time, go over each faction, and who we think the pair for the faction is.
All right, so we have Lieutenant Alistair Kane, Captain Victoria Haley, Major Beth Maddox, and Commander Coleman Stryker.
Looking at this pair, at this set of casters for Signar, I definitely think that Haley 1 goes on the list. Maybe that's just my own fear talking.
No, it's not. It's not just your fear talking.
But what's his name? Not Ace. What's the name of that god-awful Jack?
The Dynamo?
No, her Jack.
Thorn.
Thorn. Thorn. Thorn is a pain in the ass. What the hell? I hate it. I hate it. So,
I think you've got a little bit of personal bias going on there.
I definitely do. The arcing engaged just pisses me off. It just makes me angry.
It should. There's no justifiable means of being not angry at
that. So,
just anger inducing.
Thanks for justifying that. So, if Haley 1 is the lead caster in that four caster lineup, who's the other?
So I think that my personal opinion is probably Maddox, because Maddox has a damage fixing feat that doesn't require any output from anything else that you can bring in the list.
She's also got a really gnarly armor.
New caster.
She's also got a really gnarly armor amping spell.
Yeah.
And she can grant Pathfinder, which is also really big to granting Pathfinder to the Jacks with Onslaught.
Exactly.
I would actually contest it. I would probably see Stryker more than Maddox.
Why?
Gunlines. I mean, Haley's still a gunline. I mean, gunlines are strong in a pre-measuring world.
That's true. What is Stryker going to bring with a gunline that Haley 1 will not do better?
His feet will allow him to survive, or allow his forces to survive as well.
Stryker 1 is going to bring stronger Centurions. Harder to kill Centurions, and you're going to definitely see at least one of those. I agree with Aaron. I'm not convinced that both Signar lists aren't gunlines of a different bend.
Okay, so I understand that, like, shooting the gunlines, yeah, that Stryker, for one turn, Stryker's stuff's better. But Haley's Centurions are stronger longer, because...
You mean not as strong, but for longer? Stronger on average.
They don't take as much damage in terms of, like, gunshots, but... So if you put Arcane Shield on it, which is not hard, I mean, sure, you have to bring a Sentinel or a Charger or some bullshit with your little dude, and then you put Arcane Shield in this guy. Yeah, he's not going to be taking, like, he won't have the plus 5 damage feat as well, or plus 5 armor feat as well, but he can't be charged, and your opponent has minus 2 speed to even try to get near him.
Sure.
Yeah,
melee is still a big part of this, even with the gun lines and stuff.
Sure. My counter is he has a knockdown spell, which knockdown's important in this meta.
Okay.
The other thing...
Maybe not so much important, but also very prevalent.
So here, I'm going to say what I actually... So, honestly, what it's going to come down to is what your Haley list is going to build for and what it's going to be best into. Your other list will basically be covering the matchups that Haley doesn't want to see.
I hear what you're saying, but in a 3 or 4 round tournament with DNC, I don't know that your second list just doesn't do the same thing if it's really good. And sure, Haley might do it better, but when you need to do it 4 rounds in a row, Kane 1 or Stryker 1 are going to do the same game almost as good.
Well, Kane 1 also brings the fact that if you didn't bring to, that's okay. The chat's giving us a signal. So, well, we're talking about in circles here. Ultimately, I think that it's going to come down. I honestly think it'll come down to what you feel comfortable with as a player, like what you want to actually see on there. Like Aaron clearly wants more armor. Robert wants to play with a guy with a bunch of pistols and stuff.
So moving on. Let's.
I like Brienne of Signar. So, all right. So next is Minoth, the High Reclaimer, High Exemplar Krios, Malachus, the Burning Truth, and Grand Scrutator Severius.
So I know, looking at this list, the first standout is Krios. Purification strong. A lot of the answers to knockdown are animus or upkeep related. But I don't think P. Krios is the strongest choice when you're looking at a champions format. And the reason I think that is knockdown is a boogeyman of this meta, the current champion season. And in particular, P. Krios is a boogeyman. And if you don't have a plan for P. Krios or Denny Scourge or Bloody Barnabas just knocking your ass down and killing you, then I think you're doing it wrong. Because of that, I think that Severius is a stronger main choice for your Menoth pair, because I feel like there's enough tech against Krios and his knockdown plan that will stop it.
Also, you know, just I have Menoth inherently.
I have Menoth. Is really strong. Severius's feet plays into Horde's amazingly well now that animus are spells. It's gross. It is just ball breaking.
I definitely agree that Sevi is probably the first one that I'm looking at on the Menoth list. But also, why wouldn't you want to pair him with Krios? Because people are going to take those answers, but they don't always work.
That's a fair point.
Also, it's not just about like the assassination. Like, yeah, maybe they have a plan for their stats for not being assassinated, but you just knock down everything else and like it's just attrition hard. Like,
okay, so Krix, for example.
Yeah.
I believe that the Satixis captain kept no sleeping on the job.
That's true.
So I would, if I were looking to play against Krios, for example, I'd take Scar 1 and I'd take, I don't know if her FA went up to 2. If it did, I'd take 2 Satixis Raider captains.
The Raider captains were FA2 before.
As well as I just make a Satixis list. And everything is now no knockdown. That's enjoy fair. Not
you,
having a few.
You know you have 2 feet. You have 2 lists, right?
No, I do. Okay. I totally get that. I'm just saying, like, well,
that's
again.
That's what Aaron's trying to say, is like, why not pair whatever you want
with Krios 1? I can definitely see Severius and Krios as the strongest pair. What are we looking at for Kador?
For Kador, we have Lord Kozlov, Viscount of Skarsgård, Commander Sorsha, Vladimir Tepezi, I'm probably not pronouncing that right, the Dark Prince, and Osiris Zoktavir, the Butcher of Kardov.
It is really difficult to look at this and figure out a pair.
Sorsha and...
Sure, so, I can go with Sorsha and
so having recently actually just played a bunch of Sorsha 1 near the end of Mark 2, the change to not being able to charge your own models is kind of big for her, because she wants to be able to charge a model to get forward to pop her feet, and then she wants to use Windrush to get backwards into position, get the hell out of dodge, because she's very squishy. And especially with the change to the focus mechanic, the incidental like drifting AoE damage and things like that can still become very dangerous. There's a lot of different options here. Vlad is still really strong, still has signs of importance. His feat is exactly the same. But Blood of Kings is still a massive issue at the end of the game. He can do some serious work by himself towards the end. Butcher 1 still blows the ever-living hell out of pretty much everything.
I really like Kozlov, but I feel like he's the weak link of these four.
I will agree with that, because even with a feat that has an armor buff, I mean, the problem is, like, I think the Butcher, it's probably, like, the Butcher and, like, Sorsha, like, just in terms of, like, Butcher... His feet force multiplies so hard, and not to mention he has the full throttle too, which just means
absolutely Butcher supporting a couple of jacks and still a couple Fury, of right? range units. Yeah, he still has Fury.
And he has Iron Flesh too, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Iron Flesh is now armor.
He has an armor buff and 2 damage fixers.
I can go for that. So we think that Sorsha 1. Butcher 1 is going to be the Kador pair?
I do. Well, possibly.
Possibly.
But I also want to take a second to talk about the The change to the Winter Guard Rifle Corps is really big. Getting CRA and having range 14 guns is incredibly strong. Joe stayed exactly the same. You can also now attach the Rocketeers to the Winter Guard Rifle Corps. So
but they don't have CRA.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah. The point that I'm getting to is signs importance with Joe and brutal damaging rockets from a Speed 6 model with range 14 can put some serious hurting into places that you don't expect it to.
Personally, when I look at these forecasters, I'm looking at probably Vlad and Butcher. That would be the pairing that I would personally expect.
I think Vlad is also another really strong choice because of the larger battle groups that you see, and his feet still doubling the speed of all of his war jacks means that those jacks that are normally really slow and lumbering are going to get into your face incredibly quickly.
In a ranged heavy meta, I'm not against Windwall either.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, completely absolutely. Good point.
Okay.
Maybe my Sorcia bias is coming out just because, you know, somebody has touched me really in a really bad place with Sorcia before.
It's going to be
Sorcia,
Vlad.
Actually, Robert Sorcia and Chad have both touched me in very bad places with Sorcia 1 before.
I can't help it that her feet is backbreaking.
Oh, God.
Let's
was Freezing Grip. The Freezing Grip touched me way worse than her feet ever did with both of you.
And now it's cheaper.
It's like, I'm just going to hit that Skinwalker that's all the way over here and freeze the rest of your unit so they don't do anything the rest of the game ever.
That was a great game.
That happened twice. That makes Chad too.
So Crix.
Sorry, not sorry.
No, you're not. Yeah, I was supposed to. Yeah. So Bane Witch Agatha, Lich Iron Lich Agathea. It's Agathea. What kind of name is Agathea?
Some Crixian one.
A Bane name.
She wasn't a Bane when she had the name Agathea. Anyway. Iron Lich Asphyxius, War Witch Denegra, and Pirate Queen Scar.
We've already discussed this. I agree. Denny 1, Scar 1 have a solid game plan against most of the field. They crack armor both. They have so many debuffs and so much game that it's hard to argue.
Who Lich? Is he...
Actually, I want to point out something very important about Lich. So Iron Lich Asphyxius has been a very powerful melee assassin. He still has sustained attack on his weapon. He still has a feat that gives him 7 focus. So if he can get to you and hit you one time with a melee attack, throw a parasite on you, and just hit you with power 18s repeatedly until you fall over, it's a big issue. The other thing that's really important to point out to him is his brand new spell to the game called Spectral Leech. It's cost 2, range 10. It's an offensive spell. No power. Remove D3 focus or fury from a target model hit by Spectral Leech. And you can cast it multiple times.
Hit.
It doesn't do damage. It just strips focus and fury.
So it costs 2 to strip die 3.
Yes.
So let me get this straight.
But his feet replenishes his focus, and he has arc nodes.
Yeah. Really cheap, really fast arc nodes.
That all get a focus for free now.
So I'm going to run that arc node up. I'm going to strip all your focus and kill your caster. Or fury. Yep.
I still think that... that because that game plan involves distance, very, very known quantities now, it's not as strong as it might appear, but I am really interested to see that on the table.
I think you're half right. The problem is there's only so far you can stay away from a 14-inch running.
It's not the arc node that strips the fury. My thing is the thing that kills after it. Right. Okay. So you
okay,
hit that, me.
Okay, that's
you,
fair.
You take my focus, but as long as I'm not in threat of anything that can damage me.
Okay. I will accept that.
A Kraken could drop a couple of gunshots on your head.
Or after that, Lich can start casting spells.
Yeah. I mean, he
but
can just
if he has the oomph after that. I'm interested to see that. That is a valid game plan. I think Scars is more consistent.
Yeah.
I'll agree with that, especially since there's only like 3 kill box scenarios now. I will completely agree with that.
Yeah.
I think the strength is still Denny Scar, but I could definitely see Denny Lich.
I don't know anything about Agathea, to be perfectly honest. Okay.
I know that she
So let's talk about Retribution then.
Agathea, whew, I heard, does have some interesting play, but I think she's a little more finesse. And it's, I think,
man, I, am
I
not
think she's overshadowed
this.
Just by Denny and Scar.
I'm not looking forward to this much. Next ADR, which is Keylissa the Night's Whisper, Adeptus Ron, Magister Helena, and Dawn Lord Vyros. And if somebody wants to tell me why Keylissa and Ron would not be the pair, I would love to hear it.
Helena has some really awesome options.
That's yeah. true.
Helena can get... so I actually played against played a game against Helena. She can get the armor on her her list, on her armor.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. She can get the armor of her army against ranged in this, you know, ranged heavy meta to really ridiculous levels.
Okay.
Dawnguard Sentinels, base 15. While they're in base to base, Wall of Steel, they go to 17. They have a mini feat of Iron Zeal, so plus 3 armor. Now they're up to armor 20. She has D-Cell, plus 2 armor against shooting, armor 22. Discordia, bubble of plus 2 armor, armor 24. Then she feats on top of it for plus 3 more armor.
Her feat, I thought, only affected her Myrmidons.
Nope. Her feat removes all damage
from shields.
From the shields of Warjacks, and then friendly faction models inside of her control area gain plus 3 armor. So you were talking about armor 27.
I love how
Sentinels.
Other factions besides Scorn have feats that affect your whole army. That'd be so nice.
It's an amazing feat, and she has
it'd be nice to
spell?
Have a feat
rhythm?
Like that, right?
Is that what it's called?
Rhythm of War.
Yeah, Rhythm of War,
which gives it gives
models in this battle group that are in the control range can advance up to 3 inches after all friendly models have ended
yeah.
their activation.
So you can step forward with
basically
like a Banshee,
tax supremacy,
or somebody else
for your entire battle group. Yeah,
for your whole battle group.
No,
sorry, for the Warjacks in your battle group.
Yeah.
She also has she also has Obliteration. Which Obliteration randomly went to AoE 5. And with Obliteration and Silas, you can throw some big hurting through a random Chimera from a very, very long ways away.
So does that sound like an adequate reason why she might actually be on the list?
Nope.
I think she has some
really
interesting...
I will disagree with that completely. Because Ron has the has attrition potential and assassination potential, and Keylissa has the same thing.
Sure, Helena and Ron don't sound bad.
Okay, or Keylissa and Ron, or Keylissa and Helena.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
I think that pairing, once again, like everything else in this, is going to vastly depend on what it is you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, that's, and they have, I think that maybe Ron and Keylissa answer the same
that,
a little
true.
More than Helena does.
That's true. Yeah. All right, so... Convergence,
I'm gonna hand
otherwise
this over to the
known as not Axis. I will love every time we do an ADR for Convergence because it will just be not whoever.
Hey,
not
it's
X.
Not my fault that we only have 5 casters.
No, it's Privateer Press's fault. How dare you, Privateer Press? Only 5 casters.
I want to talk about that for a second. I think that makes Convergence one of the factions to beat in a champions format.
Yep.
Because your players are going to be more consistent and practiced with the casters.
All 2 of them.
You're also going to be more consistent and practiced with the answers. It being a limited faction in a limited format gives it a leg up.
Yeah, I will completely agree with that.
So my personal opinion on the pair to beat here, probably going to be Father Mother.
I can't disagree with that at all.
I mean, so Knockdown is huge in this meta. Father's steady. He has purification.
Yep.
He doesn't have purification.
He has disillusion or whatever the hell it is.
He has an effect that he can
give his jacks dispel on their melee
weapons. Dispel on melee weapons. He has the ability to remove spells if he needs to. His feat is still a time lock. He does the armor skew, which we're expecting to see, and he still does it just as well.
Yep.
Mother, oh my god, she's an amazing gunline caster now. And, I mean, I just can't even talk right now. Focus got so much better.
I can. Aaron is across the room from me, and I can still feel his erection from here. That's how much.
Hey, is it touching you in the eye right now?
Maybe a little bit.
Let's also talk about. She still has backlash, doesn't she?
Yes,
she still has backlash
and domination.
Yeah,
and
still has domination.
Backlash and domination in a game where we are required to see more heavy warjacks or more warjacks on the table.
Yes.
All right. So, mercenaries.
Mercenaries.
So for mercenaries, we have Exelon Thexus, Captain Phineas Shay, Gorton Grundback, and Magnus the Traitor.
There is actually this is one of the most interesting lineups because you have one thing from every charter, essentially. Yep. Even though the charters don't exist anymore, Exelon Thexus is still an incredibly powerful
control caster.
His feet will allow you to just shift things away around to where you want them to be.
Manipulate the board to however you want it to be.
Yeah.
And depending on, he'll be really good into the slow factions, Menoth, Kador, Scorn, where he can take the troops, push them forward, take the jacks, push them back, and murder.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in a faction where they can still bring a lot of troops. Like, Cephalix wasn't slowed down by the, like, they just bring more of their monstrosities, but their troops are still really cheap, and they can bring a lot of them.
Yeah.
And they're still really good with all their buffs.
And it turns out the monstrosities are still goddamn cheap. Yeah. They also have one of the most interesting interactions with, because they're not technically warjacks, their power-up rule works a little bit differently. And it works in a very thematic way for them, where you hit your monstrosities to give them focus.
Or if your enemies hit them, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever they get hit, they generate a focus, and they also bank that focus, which is incredibly powerful, because if you can do a couple of small things early in the game to load them up, you can sit there and have them primed and ready to go and not have to worry about loading them up on a specific turn.
And
they can be preloaded.
And if I'm not mistaken, they cannot be disrupted because they're not warjacks. And
correct. They don't have a cortex.
If I remember correctly, all the disruptions, all the things... I guess we just talked about Iron Lich. He can remove their focus.
Mm. Yes. Phineas Shay is also...
focus. A couple other things can remove
their
focus.
Sure. Well, Kalissa could also remove their focus, but it's going to be few and far between. Now that I'm talking about that, maybe that's a couple of answers to monstrosities is spells and effects that remove focus from models. I didn't even think about that before.
Yeah. So Phineas Shay will be a very, very interesting wild card in this because... We've most commonly seen him in the Pirate's Life theme force, which no longer exists now. And now that the boundaries of all of the charters are gone, you can start seeing him with some very interesting things. He provides an incredibly fast list that can jam and push people out of scenarios.
I am sad that you're only going to see maybe two pirate units. I don't think there's enough points to do all three. I've been looking at that. Pirates don't make their own list anymore, and it makes me sad.
I'm so sorry. So sorry that he gets to bring Kayazi and other things he could have now.
They don't benefit from Kudamain.
They still benefit from his feet, though.
It's true. They do benefit
and
from that.
And let me guess. What can he still bring? The Commodore cannon. Yeah.
You don't like cannonballs?
Oh, I love them so. I love them so much. It makes me really happy.
So, next one along there, Gorton. Gorton is pretty much unchanged, except for the fact that he doesn't get to charge one of his own models anymore. So
which means he just waits till turn three to pop his feet.
That's the thing is that his feet is one of the most backbreaking ones in the entire game because you can pull things up to 8 inches, debuff their defense, and then also significantly neuter any reprisal.
You can still use a basher to slam him forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or a jeweler to throw him.
That is a factual statement.
Yep. He puts up his little no knockdown spell in turn two, like you just chuck him forward, and he forfeits action, just moves forward some more, and then just pops his feet.
I think he might be an interesting person to see in the ADR.
Yeah, anybody with a controlled feat that will get is definitely interesting.
And it also has fantastic scenario play where you can just shove someone out of a zone. Just shove him back 8 inches and give him -3 speed.
Yep. And now it's time for...
Magnus. All the knockdown, all the armor, all day.
And all the chat erection.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, he loves this guy. Man.
All the armor stew.
I also want to talk about Magnus.
Does he still have Calamity?
Does he...
No, Magnus 2 has Calamity.
Oh, okay.
Does Magnus 1 suffer from too much of what the meta already expects?
No.
You mean the knockdown or?
I mean the armor, right? So
armor and knockdown.
The game plan is let's get some big armor jacks. Let's get some big armor units.
He does a little bit because he does not have a damage fixer in his kit. However, snipe on Idrians and being able to take Idrians is incredibly good. There's also a lot of access to debuffs like Ion and Holt still have their Kiss of Lilith. Gorman. You've got Hutchuck. You've got other damage fixers. The thing that I want to talk about with him specifically, actually, is just the fact that in this very knockdown prevalent meta, he is one of the very few casters that has Feign Death. So if you do knock him over, now he can't be targeted by ranged and magic attacks.
Which is even better than not being able to be knocked over in the first place.
Yep. Yeah.
I completely agree with that statement. Yeah, he also 12 point juggernauts are good. I think 12 point nomads with P Magnus are better.
11 point nomads.
Oh, so then they are strictly better because they are 1 point less.
Yeah,
I think what you're going to see as the pair is probably going to be Shay and Magnus, but I think the stronger pair is probably Exelon Magnus.
So that's, I actually
really
don't,
interesting. Actually,
I don't agree with that. Just because I think with these ones, it's going to be what people want to play. I don't think this is going to have anything to do, with what is the best. Because you can go Exelon and Gorton, because Gorton has a severe damage fixer. He has Strength of Granite.
Exelon also has some really good damage fixers. They're called Agitation.
Yeah, yeah. They have Agitators, and like he has Hex Blast, so he can remove the upkeep spells. And
yeah, Hex Blast is against Signar, for example. Hex Blast is a fantastic damage fixer.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. Trolls. So, trolls. Grizzle Bloodsong, the Fellcaller, Horluke Doomshaper, Shaman of the Gnarls, Madrak Ironhide, Thornwood Chieftain, and Ragnar Skysplitter, the Runer Master.
Runer Master.
The Typo Master.
I think Runer Master is definitely one of the stronger choices, but I know so little about trolls, I'm going to let the more intelligent people speak on this one.
So, so honestly, you have a defensive feat, a offensive feat in terms of... So Ragnar has a really good defensive feat. Magdrak 1 has a really good offensive feat. And then you have two powerful control feats. So, I mean... And like they're all troll casters.
So what pick a control caster and then go with offense or defense?
Yeah, probably.
Probably. And so... The best thing about Ragnar has a defensive feat. He has a damage buff. He has a defensive buff. He is like a really good solid like support caster that just like looks at your opponent and go, all right, what are you gonna do to me? And I'm gonna just make sure that you can't quite do that.
Is he more of a questions caster then?
I think he's probably more of a questions caster.
Okay.
But he also has some answers in terms of he has the ability to deliver his force and get the force projection out there that he needs to.
All right.
Like, for example, it's a little corner case, but if you bring a Mauler and an Impaler, Mauler and Impaler, an Impaler can be hitting you with a ranged attack that's POW 19 every turn.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
I do not like the thought of straight dice or dice off one ranged attacks to my jacks.
Yeah, and it's a light war beast.
The benefit is it's only going to be from 8 inches away.
They have 12
snipe.
You can't get rage and far strike.
Oh, that's point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two animus. Okay.
Madrak has two interesting things. Well, sorry, three interesting things.
Is this the Madrak that's the problem child on the forums?
No, that's no. Madrak 2.
That's okay. Madrak 2. Okay.
Madrak 1, Madrak 1's feat changed. Madrak 1 and Madrak 2 had their feats swap. So Madrak 1, models immediately make melee attacks against everything in their melee range. There's also two other big changes. One, he picked up Guided Hand. Adding Guided Hand into trolls is incredibly strong. The other thing that's big is the change to Surefoot. Surefoot is now a friendly faction model unit buff. is no longer just a
Does
model.
It still
buff.
Have the bubbles?
No.
Okay. That, so that's a model gets Surefoot and then everything within 3 inches.
No, no, no.
No.
That's what I was just asking.
So it's going to be a model unit cannot be knocked down.
And +2 defense.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Just straight up +2 defense.
+2 defense.
So we're talking
Let me
about
double check it, that.
14 def in melee. 14 def. Yeah. 16 in melee. Champs
cannot be knocked down.
Well, yep. Champs with the defensive line, they can't be knocked down anyway. But like,
yeah. Surefoot just.
I guess like you know. I guess you know 11 point. Creel warriors can't be knocked down.
I can definitely get behind the Madrak one, Ragnar one pair.
I agree with that. I mean,
Gristle's still just as strong. I think Doomshaper also has a lot of good utility, and he has a couple of very hard questions. His feat is still backbreaking.
Have we looked at upkeeps and how the upkeeps shape out over the casters across the factions?
Not really, because we don't have a lot of casters in these particular lists that are completely upkeep dependent.
What do you think the value is of his Purify-esque spell?
It's extremely
in this champion's season.
Yeah, because you're removing it and doing damage to them at the same time.
Yep.
But what I mean is it's good against Signar, but
it's good against Protectorate whenever there's no
Scorn,
other way.
For example, on their upkeeps, do
So I mean, like right now, I mean, you have like Makeda 1 isn't as reliant on her upkeeps as she used to be. I mean, she kind of is. I mean, like you can shoot her to death if you get rid of the shield guard spell, but I guess Hexy 1 kind of hurts, but the things that you'll be thrown into Doomshaper will be things like, you know, Morgul 1 or Zakar, which don't rely on upkeep spells.
Yeah.
Do you think if you're planning properly, you're planning for a Purification caster?
Yes. Well, you're planning one of your pairs to be a Purification caster. Okay, or at least a upkeep removal caster.
Which drops the value of Horlock 1.
I don't think so as much. Because with his spell, at least, let's say you're playing against like a person with 2 upkeep spells in play. That means their caster's taking 2d3. You're spending 4 focus. They're going to have to recast those spells next turn, and they're taking 2d3.
On top of potentially not recasting those spells.
Yeah.
If he feats, now you're taking a d6 every time you spend a focus. As for each focus that you spend.
But there's also, I mean, there's not that much upkeep removal on this ADR roster, so...
That's fair.
I mean, realistically, it might be something you don't worry about teching against.
Yeah.
Okay. I can get behind all that.
Grissel
is the low man on the totem pole,
which is weird because she's still really good.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to see maybe her, but probably 2 of the other 3 casters.
Yeah. I was going to say she is yes and no. Calamity picked up.
Yeah, she still has Calamity.
A +2 range. Calamity is still good. It's -2 defense and armor against a model or unit that gets affected by it. She picked up Boundless Charge, which is really good for getting a couple of key models at the table. The other
Wait. There's Boundless Charge in Trolls now?
Yes, there is. The other major thing about it is the
That's
change...
That's because Trolls is not Scorn.
Thank you, Aaron!
Her feet.
I want to be clear real quick. I love Scorn. And the next episode is going to like be like, what the hell are you? You like? I love Scorn. It was my second faction ever played in Hordes, or in War Machine Hordes, whatever. And I love them to pieces. And I am having my doubts about certain things, but I want to be clear. I do love it, and we give it a lot of crap just because I do love it. And we're just being fun. Like we're not saying that if you play Scorn, you're not going to be a good player. You're not competitive. That's not what we're trying to do. We're just having fun because we're crazy guys and we're probably a little sleep deprived right now. But
definitely a little bit of that.
Okay, let's go ahead and go to circle.
Last thing about Gristle is her feat no longer specifies that models affected by her feat can't be affected by other fell calls.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right.
So you can still get war cry from your fell caller on top of all of her regular fell calls from her feat.
Super.
That seems all right.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
All right. So we have, for Circle, Balder, the Stonecleaver, Kaya, the Wildborn, Kruger, the Stormwrath, and Tanith, the Feral Song.
Kruger, in the ranged heavy meta, I cannot get over that +3 defense.
Yep.
It's pretty good.
That is amazing. And yeah. goodbye cloud effects. So there's the...
So a strong counter to High Reclaimer.
The strong counter
thing that I think is the most hilarious. It's not great, but this is... So if he gets knocked down and has Skyborne up, he's still def 10 against shooting.
Yeah, if he has Skyborne and Gale Force.
Yeah.
But he also has a zero stack.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's just funny.
No, I'm sorry. He has a one stack.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Skyborne.
He can transfer one. Yeah. But still, def 10 when you're knocked down against shooting, that's pretty
pretty behind crazy. The wall, def yeah. 14, knocked
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
There you go. Boom.
And on a hill, def 16.
How
anyways.
How are you on a hill?
That's not going to happen anymore without okay. markers.
Poor terrain placement.
very poor terrain right. placement.
Okay. So me and Chad differ on the application of Worlds, so I will let Chad talk about this, and I will keep my mouth shut.
I don't know. Chad's Baldur 1 Waldrath list wasn't bad.
Yeah. I had been playing around with the Baldur 1 list because the Waldrath now has Sacred Ward, and you can now charge with speed debuffs. I was playing around with a Baldur list that was, the battle group was Feral, Getarix, Waldrath. So the entire point of it...
Oh my goodness.
The entire point, and then it was...
The beef.
Yeah, it had Blood Trekkers running in front of it.
Yep.
So you get Stone Skin, Praying... Blood Trekkers that are throwing at POW 13 Weapon Masters.
Yep. They're also solid grounded.
Yes.
Yeah.
You also have solid ground, so no knockdown, no stationary.
No blast damage.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
important. No knockdown, no blast damage.
It's very important when you're trying to kill stealth models with blast damage that they cannot be killed with blast damage.
Yeah.
So the entire point of this list
that
was...
That seems kind of fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The entire point of this list was I wanted three very hard-hitting beasts that were very difficult to remove. And with the amount of healing that you can put into a list to keep the Waldrath alive and putting him at armor 22 and power 21 is a very, very serious issue, especially when he can't be debuffed in any way by spells. So Kaeya does some very, very interesting things.
I'm actually glad you brought her up. I think she is the sort of a dark horse in this meta because people don't think about the fact that she can alpha strike you least once before. She can probably take a jack off the table for absolutely free.
Yeah.
And then
you can still throw three heavies into things and you can pull both of them back feet and then pull a third one back and still sit on three fury.
Yeah.
She also has a very, very interesting swing. If you take a Scarsfell Griffin with her, or take a couple of them, they have long leash, they're speed 7, they're naturally stealth, and you get 24 inches to benefit from her pack hunters of +2 defense, or +2 mat.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, also adding in the... Yeah,
Chad and I were talking about the her teleport to a beast being 24 inches.
Oh my god! I didn't even think about that.
You can swing your army across the table.
That's an interesting feat turn. It was like the Scarfield Griffin just run along. It's like, all right, I'm gonna run here. It's like, all right, teleport Kaeya, then pop feet, then pull one beast, then pop feet and pull two more. It's like,
exactly.
I'm behind your entire force with my entire battle group.
Also, the Animus of Dodge is kind of interesting on a caster that's naturally defense 16.
I completely agree. And you know what's also really funny? You know what's really hard to kill? Occultated skinwalkers
or occultated Reaves for the peace trading in the ranged game.
Yeah, that's that too.
Or, you know, you stick a stalker in a forest and then you put occultation onto another heavy and now you've got two stealth heavies.
I hate that we keep talking up all these casters because again it's like, well, okay, you could see any of them.
But you're most likely going to see Kruger 1 and Tanith.
Kruger 1 and Tanith do seem like the standout pair.
Yeah. Kruger 1 still blows up all the infantry. By himself. Yeah. he now has a great anti-ranged and magic defense to deliver his army.
Is blowing up all the infantry important in this cycle?
It can be.
So it can be. That's the other really interesting thing. And it's something that I've been struggling thinking about things is how much infantry are we going to see? And if it's not much... the ability to have your caster almost trivially remove possibly the only unit that your opponent may be putting on the table can be really important, because then you can just build the rest of your list to deal with the heavies that are left on the table.
I definitely think that building lists, to me, comes to three different elements. I look for what can take damage, what's going to kill units, and what's going to kill heavies. Any kind of overlap, of course, is great.
Yeah.
But I look to have a list that has those three elements in it. And when your caster is one of those elements, it just makes the rest of the list build much easier. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So
let's
now we have the sadness.
We're gonna touch tip. Well, no. Hold on. We gotta touch tips a little bit.
Okay.
About Tanith.
Tanith is good. Can we just leave it at that?
Like she
no.
is.
No, we can't.
Okay. Chad. So we're going
okay,
to just
time. Yeah. Okay. Fine.
So Tanith is super
Tanith
amazing.
Is amazing.
If you play Circle, get some table time with Tanith. She is amazing. If you are somebody who Circle is one of the things you're going to be worried about, you need to get some table time against her. She will do some things that you do not think Circle can do, including kill things that Circle has not been able to kill as easily before.
Will she touch you in the bad places?
She definitely yes. can.
With a total of a -5 to your defense, she will touch you in bad places.
Yeah. -5 defense with easily a +4 armor swing. I mean, a damage swing.
All right. So Scorn.
Lord Tyrant Hexorus, Archdomina Makeda, Master Tormentor Morgul, and Beastmaster Zakar.
I think we just let Jeremy rant for a couple of minutes and then move on.
Yeah, I think I've talked enough.
So,
how do you feel about Scorn, Jeremy?
Van Damme. I think the best two casters on this ADR are Master Tormentor Morgul and Beastmaster Zakar, simply because of the meta you'll be seeing. I'm fairly certain that someone will probably try to tell me that I'm an idiot and that Archdomina Makeda is the bee's knees. I think
you're an idiot. Archdomina Makeda.
Shut up. So, I think the only problem being is Zakar. You don't have a lot of variation here in terms of like what you can do with your ADR here. Because Zakar and Morgul play very similar games in terms of they both have a control feat. They both have a damage fixer. But I guess you can build your list differently enough with the two of them that you could probably... Zakar, he does have... It's actually a spell that like it's a debuff spell that he's putting out, so you could put more units in his list because the units will be able to benefit from
all right.
But I think it would be easily just Morgul and Zakar, and
I'm good with that.
That's good. And I wish that we had talked about this before I made my list pair for the next episode.
I'm a little bit sad that Hexorus doesn't really seem to have very much of a place in the meta right now. He's very, very much anti-infantry. He does his Spirit Leech spell is interesting because you can siphon some fury off of targets.
Yeah, he has that same spell.
Yourself.
He's the same. Is it the same one as Leech?
No, actually. So it's cost 3. It's range 10. It's POW 14. POW 13. Okay. So whenever it hits a model that has Focus of Fury on it, you remove one and then he gains it. So you get the free boost on the damage when you hit. He still has the ability to make something an arc node. Death March is still really good. The accuracy and the vengeance, the change to vengeance is really huge.
Yeah.
Now that you only have to damage, you don't have to actually kill something.
So his problem is just that he seems to be an anti-infantry caster in an infantry-like world.
That's pretty much his problem.
And his anti-infantry, so he also has a really strong anti-infantry game, just like Kruger does. The difference is that Kruger does it with only rolling a damage roll. And
Hexorus requires attack
and damage rolls and movement. So it eats up a lot more time. Gotcha. And it also requires...
it requires a lot more moving parts, too.
Yeah. It requires some other moving parts.
Sure. All right, so... when we get to this ADR, I have something I want to say whenever I'm done talking about. I'm saying what the names are. So we have Krissa, Conviction of Everblight, Lilith, Herald of Everblight, Thagrosh, Prophet of Everblight, and Vale, Disciple of Everblight. So this ADR is actually pretty interesting. Every single one of these casters has a damage buff. Every single one of them.
Oh, yeah.
We have Krissa has a feat that's +3 strength, I think. Lilith, of course, has Parasite. Thagrosh has a plus two strength upkeep spell. And then Vale, of course, has a better version of Insight now because it affects units.
So as awesome as all of these casters are, still going to be Lilith Vale. Hands down, 100%.
Thagrosh might be a close second because, I mean, he has a good trade up feet.
Thagrosh, if you want to dark horse it.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's just dark horsing. Doing a 4-point damage swing on, you know, warrior models is pretty good, especially with swordsmen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super good. I'm not saying he's not good. I'm saying Lilith and Vale are still head and shoulders above him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and all of these casters can actually get to other very strong places when you bring into consideration the Blightbringer. Still exactly the same. And the Blackfrost Shard still exists in the faction.
Yeah.
So you've got two more damage buffs to stack on top of whatever damage buff you decide to take.
I don't know that I want to see a world where Vale can use Hellmouth to pull heavies in and then walk her heavies back. That sounds disgusting.
Sounds goddamn scary.
Quit giving away my tech that I'm going to be using later.
All right. Should we move on to the final faction?
Yes.
Final faction.
Bloody Barnabas, Caliban the Gravewalker, Lord Carver, Bringer of Most Massive Destruction, Esquire the Third, and Dr. Arcadius.
Goddamn that name. That name is better than fucking Drake McBain.
So, McBain. So you're looking at Barnabas Caliban?
I am looking at Barnabas Caliban.
Pop and drop, and if you can deal with that, then just spell assassinate.
Yeah. But I mean, like, there's definitely a thing to be said for Carver and Arcadius. I mean, Arcadius's feat is really good.
I feel like Carver is definitely the low man.
Not necessarily. I mean,
which,
he has a
which is another.
I mean, like, that's
it's another situation where
I definitely
the low
see an argument for Barnabas Carver.
It's another situation where the low man in the totem pole is still a pretty decent option. Personally, I kind of feel like Caliban is actually the low man in the totem pole.
I kind of agree.
I completely disagree with that.
Yeah.
So okay. I will say this. I think Arcadius is the low man on the totem pole because the problem is Arcadius's problem is still the problem, same problem he's had. His main strength is beasts, and he still has to bring Pharaoh. Pharaoh beasts are better, but
better.
They're better, but not by much.
Okay, like, I think Jeremy actually convinced me. I will agree. Arcadius is the low man.
Yeah, okay.
Warhogs?
Have you considered boosted attack rolls with the Roadhog?
So you're talking about frenzying Roadhogs?
No, I'm talking about stabbing him with the boosted attack.
It's the... That's fair.
And then spray.
Okay. So...
I mean,
in
again,
this gun heavy meta, how does a rogue hog survive across the table?
In every list, I'm looking for a way to clear infantry. Mm-hmm. And if I can do it with a heavy, that's amazing.
Yeah. So the reason why I say, like, so Carver.
Roadhog can also still threat from really, really far away.
I understand these things. But the problem is the Roadhog you can bring with Carver. And Carver has a damage fixer in terms of he can bring units and damage fix with that. He has batten down the hatches to keep his heavies alive. Now, the one interesting thing that I noticed when I was looking at Arcadius is Forced Evo is not battle group only.
You think it wrong eye?
An interesting thing is, like, Scarith being def 16. Although, def 14 wrong eye makes him really hard to kill with Starcross.
Starcross? Yeah, yeah. Snapjaw, but...
Yeah, Snapjaw.
Yeah, sorry, Snapjaw.
Def 14, Snapjaw, Starcross. Arcadius, I like it.
Arcadius also pouch picked up...
Def 14, POW 20. Yeah.
I'm sorry. The lessers never scare me because the weak link is always the...
Shut up,
the
TEP boy. Shut up.
Without the TEP, it's never scared me.
Arcadius also picked up Guardian Beast, which is...
If you didn't have a TEP, wrong eye would scare you a lot more.
I disagree.
We'll see. I mean, welcome to playing other factions. And we're going to find out how you feel at the end of the season.
I'm going to touch you in bad, bad places with wrong eye whenever you don't have a tap to kill the fucker. Okay.
So, all right. I'll bring my loop.
Okay.
Good plan.
So, that is the entirety of the ADR for Season 4.
We we want to thank you all for listening to episode one of Four Man Meta. And we look forward to playing our games next episode and going over what actually works and what doesn't.
Do we want to talk about in this episode what we're going to be playing?
No, that's next episode.
No, that's next. We're going to start next episode with that.
Okay. Well, don't forget sign out.
Yeah.
We really haven't gone there yet.
I'm just reminding people.
I'm Robert.
I'm Jeremy.
This has been Chad.
I am the Cockmaster.
To get more content, check us out online at 4manmeta.com. If you have questions or comments, email us at 4manmeta@gmail.com or find us on Facebook under 4manmeta.